Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Ames Tribune for Thursday, November 11th, 2021. I'm your reader, Wes Etter. First up, ISU keeps new diversity graduation requirement. Philip Sitter, Ames Tribune, USA Network Today. An Iowa State University faculty vote this week preserved updates to a graduation requirement of all the university's undergraduate students, though there is not yet a timeline for when those updates will take effect. The university's provost and some faculty continued the updates to the U.S. diversity course requirement as a win, though the process of getting there was full of twists and turns and not everyone got everything they wanted. The U.S. diversity requirement, first approved in 1996, mandates that students take coursework to give students experience with significant manifestations of human diversity and provide students with insights that enhance their understanding of diversity among people in the U.S., according to the university's description. Updates to the requirement have been in the works for years. Previously, students had to complete two of the following learning outcomes: articulate how their personal life experience and choices fit within the context of the larger mosaic of U.S. society, indicating how they have confronted and critically analyzed their perceptions and assumptions about diversity-related issues; analyze and evaluate contributions of various underrepresented social groups in shaping the history and culture of the U.S. Analyze individual and institutional forms of discrimination based on factors such as race, ethnicity, gender, religion, sexual orientation, class, etc. Analyze the perspectives of groups and individuals affected by discrimination. Analyze how cultural diversity and cooperation among social groups affect U.S. society. The university's faculty senate approved four new outcomes in the spring that require students to be able to identify the experiences and contributions of underrepresented or marginalized groups and how they have shaped the history and culture of the United States, understand the analytical concepts of culture, ethnicity, race, gender, and/or religion, and be able to apply these concepts to an analysis of the United States, analyze systematic oppression and personal prejudice and their impact on marginalized communities and the broader U.S. society, evaluate important aspects of diversity, equity, and inclusion so they can live, work, and collaborate with others in the 21st century United States. Originally, students would have had to complete all four of those learning outcomes. However, as faculty approved those updates in the spring, state lawmakers also approved HF 802, a law that bans the teaching of certain concepts that Governor Kim Reynolds has said would address the teaching of critical race theory, which examines how slavery's legacy continues to influence American society in Iowa's classrooms. With the new law, Jonathan Wickert, Iowa State's senior vice president and provost, did not sign the, at the time, new version of the diversity requirement because of possible legal consequences, and because he had questions about whether there would be enough seats in classes for every student to complete their requirements in order to graduate on time. Over the summer, the faculty senate's executive board reached a compromise that Wickert and university president Wendy Winterstein did sign off on, according to Rob Schwiers, the spokesperson for the provost's office. That compromise, what remains in place after this week, is that students will have to complete a minimum of three of the four new learning outcomes, but not all four. However, the executive board's actions, overriding what the full faculty senate had passed without their approval, divided the senate. Some faculty approved rescinding the compromise either because they wanted students to have to complete all four outcomes or because they said the board's actions overstepped their authority and jeopardized the Senate's, or both. Wickert told faculty senators Tuesday that if the three of the four requirements version was rescinded, he would not sign a version of the diversity requirement that would ask students to complete all four outcomes because his original concerns remain. "Where we have landed is a win," he said of the compromise the executive board had reached. "You make progress a step at a time." Ultimately, a majority of the faculty senate did vote Tuesday against rescinding the compromise, keeping it so the students will have to complete three of the four outcomes for the U.S. diversity requirement. Faculty Senate President Andrea Wheeler told the Ames Tribune that the vote behind them, the Senate and its committees and councils can begin to work on setting a timeline for implementing the updated requirement. An ad hoc committee has already been gathering information to answer questions about the new requirement's implementation, including through a survey of faculty about whether they think their courses would fit the new requirements. According to those survey results presented Tuesday by the committee's chairperson, Megan Gillette, a professor of human development and family studies, 93% of current U.S. diversity requirement courses would fit, though that percentage depends on how much of the course's content must be tied to meeting an objective, and that percentage decreases the higher that threshold would be set. A not-yet-formed faculty committee will approve U.S. diversity courses, according to Gillette's presentation. A list of currently approved courses is available at register.iastate.edu/students/divpguide/US-diversity-courses. Philip Sitter covers education for the Ames Tribune, including Iowa State University and pre-K through 12 schools in Ames and elsewhere in Story County. Philip can be reached via email at psitter@gannett.com. He is on Twitter at PSLifeIsABeauty. Next, Ames Park Street named for Native American slur renamed. Danielle Guerre, Ames Tribune, USA Today Network. An Ames Park will now be named Iway Creek Park to align with the creek's name change earlier this year. The Ames City Council voted unanimously Tuesday to change the name of the city's Squaw Creek Park to Iway Creek Park. In February, the U.S. Board of Geographic Names changed the name of Squaw Creek, a 42-mile-long tributary of the South Skunk River, to Iway Creek. The original name is considered derogatory to Native Americans. An indigenous teen, Fawn Steuben, pushed for the change in the 1990s, but the proposal wasn't considered until Ames resident Jasmine Martin applied to the federal board in 2019. The Ames City Council, the Story County Board of Supervisors, both voted in support of the change. The current name honors the Iway, an indigenous tribe that once lived in parts of Iowa. Creek sign names have since been adjusted around Ames, but there were still remnants of the former name, including Squaw Creek Drive. The street was renamed Stonehaven Drive as part of the meeting's consent agenda. Councilmember Gloria Betcher said before approving the name change that people have asked for months why many signs and landmarks in the city do not reflect the creek's new name. "We've been telling them it's coming," Betcher said. The council addressed another holdout Tuesday, Squaw Creek Park. The park, which is also home to a community garden, sits east of the new Grand Avenue extension and west of South Maple Avenue, but Iway Creek Park wasn't the only name discussed for the park. The Parks and Recreation Commission accepted applications for a new name, receiving suggestions that it be named Sustaining Plot Works Park, Grand Wood Park, Gardens Park, Elysian Gardens, and the South Maple Community Gardens Park. Another suggestion, Lyda Conley Memorial Park and Gardens, would have honored Eliza Burton Lyda Conley, a Wyandotte American lawyer of Native American and European descent and the first woman to pass the bar in Kansas, according to city staff. What better way to rebuke the use of squaw than to name the park after a strong, accomplished, and historically significant Native American woman, the applicant wrote. According to the staff report, the Parks Commission voted unanimously to recommend Iway Creek to the council, as none of the submissions had direct ties to the park. For the same reason, city manager Steve Schenker recommended the council approve the Iway Creek Park name, too. Danielle Guerre is a politics and government reporter for the Ames Tribune. She can be reached by email at dguerre@gannett.com, phone at 515-663-6925, or on Twitter at @Danny_Guerre. Next, look inside the Downtown Plaza conceptual design. Danielle Guerre, Ames Tribune, USA Today Network. Council members, city staff, and meeting attendees on Tuesday night parked their cars across from City Hall, a lot that soon enough won't exist. Design firm Confluence and city staff updated the council that night on the future downtown plaza, a new outdoor meeting space that will replace the parking lot east of Ames City Hall. Artwork, events, and outdoor recreation will fill the space once completed, the design consultant says. You have a number of wonderful spaces downtown, but this is certainly a different one, Confluence principal Matt Carlisle said. Really, the opportunities that can happen in this space are endless. Though the full details are not yet complete, conceptual design has been created, estimated to cost $4.3 million, a $450,000 shortfall from the originally dedicated funding. Last February, the city and Confluence asked residents for their input on the project. Here's a look inside the current design concept. Ice skating to water features. The year-round space will adapt to the weather. In the summer, people can enjoy water features like a splash fountain and a water runnel. Come winter, the area transforms into a space for skating. Parks and Recreation Director Keith Abraham said the water runnel will be wheelchair accessible. As people voted in favor of in January, the plaza will have an ice ribbon for people to skate laps on, as well as a spin zone to pull off for people to skate at their own pace. The rink will have a natural ice rather than synthetic. The city will also run skate rentals at the site during the winter. A new space for gathering. Green space and seating will allow for lounging. A small stage, though not the main focus of the space, will offer opportunities for entertainment. Carlisle said this will draw people to the area throughout the day and into the evening. Lighting is going to be a key component to this. That space needs to read well at night, Carlisle said. We know there are going to be lots of events if this is done successfully, which it will be. Various seating is intended to be movable to ensure flexibility of the space for different events and uses. A building on the site will have gender-neutral bathrooms and a canopy for seating. A clear overhang is currently planned. And Councilmember David Martin questioned how effectively this would shade people. Carlisle said he'd bring his concerns back to the architects. Councilmember Gloria Betcher said she'd hoped for more green space than what appears on the renderings. Part of this is to account for the ice rink's infrastructure. It's that balance of having that flexibility that you can have all sorts of events, Carlisle said. I think it's a little bit of a trade-off. Where will people park? While the project means losing several parking spots, a new lot is planned on 6th Street, north of City Hall, including both metered and reserved parking spots. Metered spots will also be added on Clark Avenue in front of City Hall, which means the utility bill drop box will no longer be a drive-thru, but there will be a dedicated spot for drivers to pull in and out for drop-offs. There will still be parking along 5th Street south of the site. With the new project, the total spaces in the area will go from 86 to 74, according to the staff report, with 9 fewer metered spaces. Bike parking will also be available on the south side of the plaza for those riding to the site. Danielle Guerre is a politics and government reporter for the Ames Tribune. She can be reached by mail at dguerre@gannett.com, phone at 515-663-6925, or on Twitter @Danny_Guerre. Next, how to schedule a COVID-19 vaccine for your child. Staff reports. Ames Tribune, USA Today Network. The COVID-19 vaccine is now available to U.S. children as young as 5 years old, and Story County medical providers are taking appointments. Last week, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention gave the final approval to Pfizer's COVID-19 shot for children ages 5 to 11, a third of the dose given to people over 12. Families can schedule COVID-19 appointments for their children through McFarland Clinic, Story County Public Health, Hy-Vee, and other providers. McFarland Clinic, schedule an appointment for a COVID-19 and or influenza vaccine online at vaccine.mcfarlandclinic.com, 1215 Duff Avenue, office 515-239-4431, Family Medicine East office at 1018 Duff Avenue, 515-663-8621. For a full list of locations, visit mcfarlandclinic.com/doctors/locations. Story County Public Health, call 1-800-945-8563 to schedule an appointment. Schedule an appointment online at mgmc.org/coronavirus/COVID-19 vaccine /Hy-Vee Pharmacy. Schedule an appointment online at hy-vee.com/myPharmacy/vaccine consent. For assistance in scheduling your vaccination, call 888-330-3307. Walgreens, 2719 Grand Avenue, 515-232-8284. Check dose availability and schedule an appointment at walgreens.com/findcare/vaccination/COVID/19/landing. Story County Medical Center. Currently, Story Medical is only giving the pediatric dose of the COVID-19 vaccine to its own patients, spokesperson Alani Pringanitz told the Ames Tribune. Parents or guardians can call their local clinic to make an appointment for their child. Story Medical Clinic, Maxwell, 515-387-8815. Story Medical Clinic, Nevada, 515-382-5413. Ames Community School District. The school district in Ames is hosting a vaccination clinic from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday for children ages 5 to 11. Second doses will be administered at the same appointment times on Saturday, December 4th. Parents with children in elementary school or 6th grade were notified about the clinic via email from the district Monday, and 216 appointment spots were available, according to the information shared Monday night by Kathy Arnold, Ames's Health and Well-Being Services Supervisor. Questions about the clinic can be sent to vaccine.clinics@ames.k12.ia.us. Next, consumer prices soar by 6.2% over past year. Inflation eroding gains in Americans' wages. Christopher Ruggeber, Associated Press, Washington. American households have been struggling with accelerating inflation for months. On Wednesday, the government spelled out just how much they have. Prices for U.S. consumers jumped 6.2% in October compared with a year earlier, as surging costs for food, gas, and housing left families facing the highest inflation rate since 1990. The year-over-year rise in consumer price index exceeded the 5.4% rise in September, the Labor Department said. From September to October, prices jumped 0.9%. Inflation is eroding the strong gains in wages and salaries that have flowed to American workers in recent months, creating political headaches for the Biden administration and congressional Democrats, and intensifying pressure on the Federal Reserve as it considers how fast to withdraw its efforts to boost the economy. With Americans in the midst of planning year-end travel, Thanksgiving meals, and holiday gifts, the jump in inflation is making the cost of those purchases significantly higher than they were last year. Fueling the spike in prices has been robust consumer demand, which has run into persistent supply shortages from COVID-19 related factory shutdowns in China, Vietnam, and other overseas manufacturers. Ports are bottlenecked, with a lack of shipping containers magnifying the problem. America's employers, facing worker shortages, have also been handing out sizable pay raises, and many of them have raised prices to offset their higher labor costs. The result has been accelerating prices for a broad range of consumer goods, from food, heating oil, and patio furniture to paints, chemicals, and window blinds. After initially affecting mainly goods in pandemic-disrupted industries, surging inflation has broadened into many services on which Americans spend money, notably for restaurant meals, rental apartments, and medical services, which jumped 0.5% in October. Used car prices jumped again last month after having eased in August and September. The cost of a used vehicle rose 2.5% from September to October and has soared more than 25% from a year ago. With automakers having sharply slowed production because of parts shortages, prices for new cars have risen for 7 straight months. Grocery prices have climbed 5.4% in the past year, which will make Thanksgiving meals much costlier. The price of beef roasts has leapt 25% from a year ago. Bacon is up 20%. In the past year, energy costs have jumped a whopping 30%, with gasoline soaring nearly 50%. A gallon of gas, on average, was $3.42 nationwide on Tuesday, according to the AAA. That's up from just $2.11 a year ago. Natural gas prices are also surging, and so is heating oil. The Energy Information Administration forecasts that these increases will bite hard this winter, with Americans expected to spend 30% more on natural gas and 43% more on heating oil. Fast food prices soared 7.1% in October from a year earlier, the government said Wednesday. That was the largest such increase on record, reflecting higher costs for beef and other foods, as well as rapidly rising labor costs. Next, Trump denied blockage of records. Norman Merchant, Associated Press, Washington. A federal judge rejected former President Donald Trump's request to block the release of documents to the White House committee investigating the January 6th Capitol riot. In denying a preliminary injunction, U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan said Tuesday that Congress had a strong public interest in obtaining records that could shed light on a violent insurrection mounted by the former president's supporters. She added that President Joe Biden had the authority to waive executive privilege over the documents, despite Trump's assertion otherwise. Barring a court order, the National Archives plans to turn over Trump's records to the committee by Friday. But Trump's lawyers swiftly promised an appeal. The case will likely eventually head to the U.S. Supreme Court. At bottom, this is a dispute between a former and incumbent president, Chutkan wrote. And the Supreme Court has already made clear that in such circumstances, the incumbent's view is accorded greater weight. Trump does not acknowledge the deference owed to Biden's judgment as the current president, Chutkan said. She noted examples of past presidents declining to assert executive privilege and rejected what she said was Trump's claim that executive privilege exists in perpetuity. Presidents are not kings, and plaintiff is not president, she said. Next, Merkel asks Putin for migrant intervention. Vanessa Guerra, Monica Schlewowska, and Geir Molson, Associated Press. Warsaw, Poland. German Chancellor Angela Merkel asked Russian President Vladimir Putin on Wednesday to intervene with Belarus over the migrant situation on that country's border with Poland, where groups of migrants made bold attempts this week to cross into European Union territory. The Chancellor's office said Merkel spoke with Putin by phone and underlined that the exploitation of migrants against the European Union by the Belarusian regime is inhuman and completely unacceptable. Merkel asked the Russian president to exert his influence on the regime in Minsk, her office said. Russia is a close ally of the government in Belarus. Germany is a favored destination for migrants who manage to enter the EU. The readout of the call released by the Kremlin said Putin proposed a discussion of the problems that have come up between EU member nations and Belarus. It also said that Putin and Merkel agreed to continue the conversation on this issue. Meanwhile, the European Union said for the first time that it was discussing possibly funding a wall on the EU's external borders. The EU's Executive Commission has never allowed EU money to be used to finance walls, fences, or barriers, but is facing pressure by several member countries to do so now. During a visit aimed at showing support for Poland, Michael said that Poland was facing a serious crisis and a brutal attack and deserved solidarity from the rest of the 27-nation EU. Poland's defense ministry and local police reported Wednesday that multiple groups of migrants tried to enter the country late Tuesday and early Wednesday, but that all the people who made it were detained. Hundreds of migrants have been camping since Monday on the Belarus side of the border, across from the Polish village of Kuznica. Poland's defense ministry also accused Belarusian forces of firing shots into the air in a border area where migrants caught between the neighboring countries have set up a makeshift camp. The ministry posted a video on Twitter with noises of what sounded like shots. In recent months, Poland, Lithuania, and to a lesser degree, Latvia, all EU members located on the bloc's eastern border have complained about unusually high numbers of migrants entering or trying to enter the countries from Belarus. EU leaders accused the regime of Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko of opening up a new migration route to Europe to create instability in retaliation for sanctions the bloc imposed on Lukashenko's authoritarian government. Caught in the bitter political standoff, have been thousands of migrants, some of them families with children, who have been pushed back and forth in a forested area of swamps and bogs at the Poland-Belarus border. 8 deaths there have been confirmed, and the situation is growing even more dangerous as temperatures drop below freezing at night. Next, WHO, COVID down except in Europe, Associated Press, London. The World Health Organization reported Wednesday that coronavirus deaths rose by 10% in Europe in the past week, making it the only world region where both COVID-19 cases and deaths are steadily increasing. It was the 6th consecutive week that the virus has risen across the continent. In its weekly report, the UN Health Agency said there were about 3.1 million new cases globally, about a 1% increase from the previous week. Nearly two-thirds of the coronavirus infections, 1.9 million, were in Europe, where cases rose by 7%. The countries with the highest numbers of new cases worldwide were the United States, Russia, Britain, Turkey, and Germany. The number of weekly COVID-19 deaths fell by about 4% worldwide and declined in every region except Europe. Out of the 61 countries WHO includes in its European region, which includes Russia and Central Asia, 42% reported a jump in cases of at least 10%. In the Americas, WHO said new weekly cases fell by 5% and deaths declined by 14%. With the highest numbers reported from the U.S. You are listening to the reading of the Ames Tribune for Thursday, November 11th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Marcia Jean Rumper Harris, Panora. Marcia Jean Rumper Harris, 87, of Panora, Iowa, passed away Wednesday, November 3rd, 2021, surrounded by family and friends, at the Guthrie County Hospital, Guthrie Center, Iowa. Marcia was born on September 8, 1934, in Des Moines, to Raymond Samuel and Gladys Brockway Rumper. She married William G. Harris on June 18, 1954. Marcia enjoyed playing golf, bridge, traveling, and watching all types of sports. She really enjoyed sharing a glass of beer or wine with good friends. Also known as the Sassy Bear Lady, she collected all types of bears from all over the world, many gifted from friends and family. Marcia was a lifelong Chicago Cubs fan who lived long enough to see them win the World Series in 2016, which she was grateful for. Marcia was preceded in death by her husband of 54 years, Bill Harris, her mother Gladys and father Raymond Samuel Rumper, sister Sharon West of Des Moines, and son-in-law Roger Sidneys of Ames. She is survived by her son Mark Harris of Elkhart, daughter Kim Sidneys, and her children Sam and Andy of Ames, as well as a very dear nephew and nieces. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to First Presbyterian Church in Guthrie Center, Iowa. Marcia's celebration of life will be held at the Lake Panorama Conference Center, Panora, Iowa, on Saturday, November 13, 2021, from 2 to 4 p.m. Terry Marvin Benbow, formerly of Woodward, December 11, 1946 to October 31, 2021. Terry Benbow, formerly of Woodward, Iowa, went home to his Heavenly Father's arms on October 31, 2021. For full obituary, visit www.ballardfh.com. Graveside services will be Friday, November 12th at 11 a.m. at the Iowa Veterans Cemetery in Van Meter, Iowa, followed by refreshments at the Des Moines West KOA 34308 L Avenue, Adel, Iowa, 5003. Jerome Peterson. Jerome Jerry Peterson, 100, passed away Saturday, October 30th, 2021. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, November 13th, at Ascension Lutheran Church in Ames. Jerome is survived by his daughter, Nancy Peterson, granddaughter, Kara Ross Anderson, and great-grandson, Oscar Jerome Anderson, all of Ankeny. Gordon Thomas Quam. Gordon Thomas Quam, 87, passed away suddenly and unexpectedly in a farm accident on November 7th, 2021. He was born November 23, 1933, to Truman and Minnie Quam on the family homestead near Stanhope, Iowa. He attended country school and then graduated from Story City High School. Growing up, he was very involved in 4-H, showing hogs and winning many awards, including the state championship boar one year. While serving his country after high school in the Army, he was stationed in Texas and Kansas. In 1954, while on leave, he married Laura Hasselbrook, who was a teacher in the Story City School. They celebrated their 67th anniversary this spring. His primary role in the Army was to service planes for the officers' flying school. Gordon became friends with many of the officers and also became a certified pilot. After honorably discharged, he enrolled in the business school at Drake University. While working several jobs, renting rooms to boarders, and welcoming daughter Deborah and son Dennis, he graduated after just 3 years. After graduation, he was employed by Brenton Bank in Dallas Center, but the lure of the land brought him back to Hamilton County, where he worked for Farmer State Bank in Stanhope for many years and also had responsibilities including insurance and real estate. The family moved to Boone in 1972 when Gordon had the opportunity to purchase several insurance agencies and eventually became a Century 21 realtor with Laura. He deeply appreciated his associates and customers, many long-term, who became friends over the subsequent years. Gordon and Laura enjoyed many travel adventures, both in the States and worldwide, for both pleasure and agricultural perspectives. He was a longtime member of the Lions Club in both Stanhope and Boone, as well as Augustina Lutheran Church. He is survived by his wife Laura, daughters Deborah, Joe, Martino, Virginia, and son Dennis, Chris, Qualm, Boone, grandsons Jason, fiance Katie, Qualm, Pennsylvania, and Ryan Qualm, Des Moines, Jack Martino, New York, and granddaughter Grace Martino, California. Step-grandsons Kurt, Texas, and Tim, Margaret, Martino, New York, brother Nolan, Linda, Qualm, Des Moines, and brothers-in-law Wayne, Barb Hasselbrock, Webster City, sister-in-law Barbara Hasselbrock, Texas, and several cousins. He was preceded in death by his parents, numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins, and brother-in-law Harold Hasselbrock. His passions were his family, friends, and farming. Visitation will be Thursday, November 11, 2021, from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Schroeder Stark Wellen Funeral Home, 609 7th Street, Boone, Iowa, 50036. The family will be present to greet friends from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. The funeral will be held 10:30 a.m. Friday, November 12, 2021, at Augustana Lutheran Church, 309 South Green Street, Boone, Iowa, 50036. Lunch will follow at Cedar Point Golf and Country Club, 601 South Cedar Street, Boone, Iowa, 50036. Interment will be at the Story City Fairview Cemetery, 908 Grand Avenue, Story City, Iowa, 50248, at 2:30 p.m. for those who would like to join. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to Augustana Lutheran Church or the Boone Lions Club. Gail Atchison, Ames. Gail Ann Atchison, age 79, passed away peacefully at home with her family on Saturday, November 6, 2021. Gail was born on June 5, 1942, in Traverse City, Michigan, the daughter of Glenn and Norma Lewis Jordan. She was a graduate of Traverse City High School class of 1960, earning an associate degree from Northwestern Michigan College, followed by a bachelor's degree in elementary education from Michigan State University in 1964. Having met Gary Atchison while at Northwestern Michigan, the two were married on August 8, 1964 in Saginaw, Michigan. Gail started her teaching career in 1965, teaching fifth grade at Maple Hill Elementary School in Lansing, Michigan. Gail and Gary made their way to Iowa, where Gail taught sixth grade at Roosevelt Elementary School in Ames for 2 years. Gail and Gary relocated back to East Lansing, Michigan, where son Brad was born in 1968, followed by Detroit, and then West Lafayette, Indiana, where son Mark was born in 1976, before returning to Ames in 1977. As a lifelong teacher, Gail loved children. Gail served as a teacher, then the director of the Collegiate United Methodist Church Cooperative Preschool, now Adventures Preschool, for 22 years before retiring in 2003. She thoroughly enjoyed working with children and families and often shared humorous stories about her time as a preschool teacher. In addition to working with children, she found pleasure and great friends in her remaining years through her passion for quilting and other forms of art. The true loves of her life, though, were her family, especially her granddaughters, Lily and Clara, who filled her life with joy until her very last days. Gail instilled a love of reading, crafting, and baking in her granddaughters, which is sure to benefit them throughout their lives. Gail will be remembered by Lily and Clara for her positive attitude, unwavering support, and for the limitless love she provided. Gail touched countless lives with her kind, good-natured way and ability to bring comfort with ease whenever needed. She leaves behind her husband of 57 years, Gary, grandchildren Brad, Tracy Kreese Atchison, and Mark Atchison, grandchildren Lily and Clara, siblings Glenna Dell Gammon of Chesterfield, Michigan, Jim Kathy Jordan of Decatur, Georgia, and John Mary Kay Jordan of Saginaw, Michigan, along with many nieces and nephews. Gail is preceded in death by her parents, Glenn and Norma. A celebration of life reception will be held at Grandin Funeral and Cremation Care at a later date. N. Fern Anderson, 96, Roland, Iowa, November 8th at the Boak Funeral Home, Radcliffe. And now on to sports. Deeper look at Hunter's ISU debut, men's college basketball. Ames. Let's start with the obvious after T.J. Otzelberger's Iowa State coaching regime opened with an 84-73 victory against Kennesaw State Tuesday night at Hilton Coliseum. Let's start with the guy who will run for the team. Let's start with the freshman point guard, Tyrese Hunter. While there were times that his foul trouble was so severe that Otzelberger wondered if he even had a true rotation to put on the floor, the freshman playmaker drew most of the post-game attention. And rightly so. This season is about development. The season is about building a foundation. And the cornerstone of that foundation is Hunter, a dazzling guard that was among the nation's elite. He did some good things, and I have a higher bar and expectation of how he can play, Otzelberger said after the Cyclones' 18-game losing streak ended. I know he can do that. He had about every type of adversity you can have. We're going to go with him. He's earned that on a daily basis. Tyrese is a really high IQ player. He's got great character and great knowledge of the game. He sees things before they're going to happen. Hunter wasn't great while scoring 11 points, handing out 5 assists, and collecting 4 fouls. He wasn't bad either. He actually played better during his 20 minutes that most freshmen would put in that same spot. And get this, his 11 points came on just 6 shots. He had a lot of poise, guard Gabe Kulscher said. He was very aggressive. He kept us under control in the second half, when we were kind of discombobulated a little bit. He slowed it down for us, and I think that's rare. It shows the kind of maturity that he has. He has a bright mind for the game. That's rare as a freshman. Other thoughts while analyzing a game that included a whopping 57 fouls. Playing through freshman mistakes. Iowa State has had wonderful point guards during recent years. Monty Morris and Tyrese Haliburton come to mind. Will Hunter be in their company someday? That's the plan. Hunter showed flashes Tuesday of good times to come, but let's remember that he's just learning the college game. He's the point guard of the present and the future. The plan in these early learning games is Hunter having more good stretches than the alternative. Otzelberger will live with whatever he gets, because he knows he's got a good one. The fouls, 3 in the first half, put him in a challenging spot, Otzelberger said. He kept his composure. He's a guy that bounces back from things. A lot of times with guys, when things aren't going their way, they struggle to get it going. What I've seen from Tyrese is that he has tremendous maturity for a freshman. George Condit, Robert Jones are two-headed monsters in the post. That's how it'll play out during the season, given they're the only true posts on the team. Jones started and Condit played 13 more minutes. They rotate to make sure there's a fresh player in the paint. They rotate because Jones is physical, Condon's finesse. It's not who starts or stars, it's what they do combined, which Tuesday was 11 points and 8 rebounds. Those guys have a two-headed monster for us, Altelberger said Tuesday. Georgia was a little bit more effective. His experience of playing in this building certainly did him well. Robert earned the starting job, though, what he does every day in practice. He brings physicality. He's got great character and great knowledge of the game, ISU coach T.J. Altelberger. On guard, Tyrese Hunter. Cyclones got it on defense at times. That was a major focus during practices leading up to the opener. It will be Altelberger's focus throughout, but more so now. Why? Uncertainty of the perimeter shooters. That was a plus, actually, the strength of teams for whom Altelberger was a Fred Hoiberg assistant. Successful shooting outside the paint had dropped off a lot in recent season. Last year's 41.8% ranking, 267th nationally. And speaking of perimeter shooting, it was all right. Iowa State shot 52.9%, including 32% from three-point range. Kalshur, the Minnesota transfer, scored 19 points on 5 of 11 shooting. Penn State transfer Isaiah Brockington scored 18 points on 6 of 10 shooting. Brockington went to the basket aggressively. He made mid-range shots. Between him and Kalshur, they were consistent scoring threats. Isaiah is a gifted player, Altelberger said. He's an aggressive and an attacking guy. Defensively, he sets the tone. We turn them over 24 times. He takes tremendous pride in guarding the basketball. He takes pride in rebounding. He can be electric at getting downhill and attacking. And he's got a unique mid-range game. All of which were on display Tuesday before a crowd of 12,180. And finally, here's how Altelberger started his first post-game press conference as Iowa State's coach. Well, we appreciate everybody staying up late through that foul fest. Hopefully we didn't set basketball back far. Last season's 2-22 team set Cyclones basketball back. Tuesday showed that there's hope for the future. Iowa State columnist Randy Peterson has been writing for the Des Moines Register for parts of 6 decades. Reach him at rpeterson@dmreg.com, 515-284-8132, and on Twitter at Randy P. Next, Ames ready to defend state championship. High school girls swimming and diving. Joe Randleman, Ames Tribune, USA Today Network. The Ames girls swimming and diving team will be gunning for its 10th state championship in 12 years this weekend in Marshalltown. Ames is the defending state champion after defeating Iowa City West 303 points to 277.5 to claim the 2020 championship. The 2020 state title run was one of the most memorable in state history as the Cyclones won it for Hall of Fame head coach Dan Flannery, who passed away just before the start of the season. Winning state championship number 10 won't be an easy task. Iowa City West brings back the most talented swimmer in the state in senior Scarlett Martin, and Waukee dominated Ames in a dual meet earlier in the season. Waukee is amazing. We didn't win a single event when we swam against them, Ames head coach Joe Fisher said. They are by far the best team in the state. They have depth in every event, top to bottom. I'm fairly certain they left a number of girls home that would easily place at state meet. Iowa City West, Scarlett Martin, is just an incredible talent, and they're hungry as well. But as last year showed, when it comes to girls swimming, never count out the little Cyclones. Our senior class is poised to have a fantastic meet, Joe Fisher said. It's going to be a fun weekend for them. Ames brings back 50 and 100-yard freestyle state champion Megan Donald, a North Carolina State recruit. Michaela Cloth trails only Martin in the 100 butterfly. The Little Cyclones also have the fastest qualifying times in 2 of the 3 relay events. Depth will also be a big advantage for Ames. For only the second time in their storied history, the Little Cyclones maxed out state qualifiers for swimming events with 27. I'm really excited we got all our swims in, Ames senior Abby Halla said. It's always fun to have everyone who was on the regional team get there. It will be about swimming for their best times and letting the chips fall where they may. The main thing we've been focusing on is having fun, Halla said. We swim a lot faster when we're having fun rather than worrying about everything. It will be really nice to just go out there and swim for the team and have a good time. The individual qualifiers in each event at state for Ames are Lauren Fisher, Riley Snakenberg and Loretta Ostemeyer in the 200 freestyle. Halla, Andrew Robertson, and Reese Wiener in the 200 individual medley. Donald Cloth and Sophie McCorkle in the 50 free. Cloth, her twin sister Jordan, and Liz Powers in the 100 fly. Donald, McCorkle, and Sailor Horace in the 100 free. Fisher, Snakenberg, and Liz Powers in the 500 free. Halla, Jordan, Cloth, and Ostemeyer in the 100 backstroke. Robertson, Wiener, and Olivia Knudsen in the 100 breaststroke. Donald is ranked first in both the 50 and 100 freestyle races. Michaela Cloth is second in the fly and fourth in the 50 free. Fisher sixth in the 200 free. Jordan Cloth sixth in the fly and eighth in the backstroke. Halla seventh in both the IM and backstroke, and Robertson seventh in the breaststroke. Ames has the fastest time in both the 200 medley and 200 freestyle relays going into state. Jordan Cloth, Robertson, Michaela Cloth, and Donald swam the medley in 1:45.91. McCorkle, Horace, Michaela Cloth, and Donald did the freestyle in 1:36.39. The Little Cyclone 400 freestyle relay team of McCorkle, Horace, Fisher, and Jordan Cloth ranked 7th heading into the state with a qualifying time of 3:36.98. State is a really fun environment, Halla said. I'm excited to see how we perform. The state meet begins Friday at the Marshalltown YMCA-YWCA with the diving competition at 11 a.m. The swimming preliminaries start at 5 p.m. The swimming finals take place Saturday at noon. Next, ISU LB rows outstanding in return from rotator cuff injury. Travis Hines, Des Moines Register, USA Today Network. Ames. For more than 3 years and 45 straight games, Mike Rose was the constant for the Iowa State defense. Whether at middle or strong side linebacker, the Brecksville, Ohio native started every game of his Cyclone career, until his rotator cuff betrayed him. A couple of hits in the Oklahoma State game, Rose said, just kind of did a number on it. The injury kept the All-American and reigning Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year out of Iowa State's loss at West Virginia, snapping his start streak, and limited him last weekend in the Cyclones' victory over Texas. Now it seems he's well on his way to getting fully back to speed. If Rose is able to start the final 3 games of the regular season, he will break Iowa State's career starts record with 50 in either the Big 12 championship game, if Iowa State earns a second straight berth there, or the Cyclones bowl game. We're really excited where he's at, Iowa State coach Matt Campbell said Tuesday, ahead of his team's Saturday matchup with Texas Tech, 2:30 p.m., ESPN2. I think he's really excited where he's at, because there's way more confidence this Monday than there was last Monday at this time. The fact that he's feeling healthy, we didn't have any setback, is a really good place for Mike and a really good place for our defense. Rose had 5 tackles last weekend against the Longhorns as he ceded just under half the defensive snaps to his backup, Eric Horn. Hopefully, as time keeps going on, I can be out there as much as I want to be, Rose said. The thinking behind that, playing time share, is just to have me there for the long haul. If I wanted to, and we wanted to, I could probably play every snap. But is it smart for the long haul? I don't think so. That's our approach for right now. Rose, though, did have to endure the torture of making the trips to Morganstown to watch his Cyclone defense have its worst performance of the season. Iowa State suffered a damaging defeat to the Mountaineers the week after a huge win against previously undefeated Oklahoma State. The Cyclone defense gave up season worst in points and yards allowed, despite getting a pick six from linebacker Jake Hummel. Honestly, it's really, really weird feeling, Rose said, of watching a game from the sideline for the first time. It's definitely more stressful watching a game than being able to go out there and make a difference yourself. It definitely hurt me, but I was glad I was able to help out the team Saturday against Texas. The Iowa State defense was much improved against the Longhorns, allowing just 205 yards of total offense and 7 points in Rose's return. Mike is always prepared, cornerback Datron Young said. He's always there with his presence. His presence alone is good for the team. That presence grew into production as the game went on. The confidence rose as the game progressed, Campbell said. That's anybody coming back from being out a week. There's always a little bit of a slow start, but midway through the first quarter on, Mike was outstanding. Travis Hines covers Iowa State University sports for the Des Moines Register and Ames Tribune. Contact him at thines@amestrib.com or 515-284-8000. Follow him on Twitter at TravisHines21. Next, Rose Purdy Hall bonded by more than just football. Randy Peterson, columnist, Des Moines Register, USA Today Network, Ames. There's probably not one Ames residence that has as much athletic talent living in it than the one that houses three of Iowa State's football's best evers. Brock Purdy and Mike Rose were the first to form this bond that both say is unbreakable. Breece Hall was next. The brotherhood of stars will last forever. Their current living arrangement, however, is about to end the way it should end, with all three on top of their games. There's not a better running back in the Big 12 than Hall. You can make an argument for Purdy being the conference's top quarterback, although most would side with Oklahoma's Caleb Williams. You'll not find a better Big 12 linebacker than Rose. What they've meant to Iowa State football since they arrived in Ames has been immeasurable, and for the last 3 years, all three have lived lives under the same roof. What are the odds? It's been really good for them, Coach Matt Campbell said after his weekly press conference Tuesday. Honestly, all three have had great effects on each other. Breece is loose. Breece can have a good time with anybody. He's got a smile on his face all the time, which I think at times has really helped Brock and Mike. Mike is even keel. I think he's helped Brock kind of settle out when things have been tough, and they've got a great relationship. Brock, his passion to be the best, has rubbed off on and had a great impact on the other two. Purdy and Rose have played in Alamo, Camping World, and Fiesta Bowls. Hall has Camping World and Fiesta on his eye-popping resume. Together, they've been part of victories against mighty Oklahoma. They've owned the defecting Longhorns. The Cyclones are 23-10 with Rose and Purdy, including 17-7 with Hall over the past three seasons. They played in the last season's Big 12 championship game, and their 2021 path to that game continues during Saturday's 2:30 p.m. game at Texas Tech. Three players, huge contributors to a program once considered the Big 12's laughingstock, living together. It's always been fun coming back home from football or wherever we've been, just talking, hanging, and being boys, Purdy said Tuesday. We're out there trying to lead this team, and then we're able to come home and be real with each other, actually dive into each other's relationships and grow together. And it's about to end. After Saturday, it's at Oklahoma, then back home against TCU on November 26th, and then whatever postseason games follow. It's been cool, Rose said, of sharing experiences among roomies. We're all a little different, but it's good. We always can push each other, since we're all doing stuff at such a high level. Purdy and Rose are seniors. It'll be an upset if Hall, a junior, doesn't enter the NFL draft whenever the season ends. It's been fun to watch how these three have impacted each other. All in a really positive way, Campbell said. We're really fortunate because our really good players stand for everything that's right about what our football program wants to be. Their character, how they go about their business, how they go to practice, how they take care of their bodies, all the little things it takes to be successful, our good players do that. And it's all taken root while living under the same roof. Who's the best athlete of the three? I think we all should say it's ourselves, but it's probably Breece, Rose said. Me and Brock, we mess around with Breece, saying he had to work a little harder for what we got. But like you yank his chain about being supernaturally gifted, which he is, and we all are, it's fun to give Breece crap about that. While Campbell has had players to his home, he's never had the privilege of being at the Hall Purdy Rose abode. I can only imagine what it'd be like, he said. My guess is Breece has the music really loud, Brock's yelling at him, and Mike's got the kitchen a mess. That's probably not too far off. It all comes on me, Rose said. I get a lot of flack. Really, it's all three of us, but I take the downfall for it. So, who inherits the place? What happens after the terrific trio go their separate ways? Hopefully some younger guys that are ready to take the reins, Purdy said. We've got prospects we still have to look at. Whoever moves into the three-bedroom, three-bath place, a high bar has been set. Actually, the highest in Iowa State football history. Iowa State columnist Randy Peterson has been writing for the Des Moines Register for parts of six decades. Reach him at rpeterson@dmreg.com, 515-284-8132, and on Twitter at @RandyPeep. And that does it for today's reading of the Ames Tribune for Thursday, November 11th, 2021. I'm your reader, Wes Etter. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.
Some would call 88-year-old Sally Jackson a lucky senior.
A few years ago, a family member offered to move in and care for Sally so that she wouldn't have to leave the comfort of her own home.
But soon after, one of Sally's neighbors, Carol, paid a visit, unannounced.
Something wasn't quite right.
Sally's demeanor and physical appearance had changed.
Luckily, Carol was aware of warning signs that might signal elder abuse.
Such as bruises, poor hygiene,
isolation, depression,
appearing withdrawn or unusually quiet, as if to hide something.
When victimized, elderly people often feel ashamed, confused.
But an alert neighbor helped Sally.
Not all abused seniors are as lucky as Sally Jackson.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. The National Crime Prevention Council wants to help you and your loved ones prevent elder abuse. Know what to look for. Know how to report it to local law enforcement agencies.
To learn more, go to ncpc.org/seniors. That's ncpc.org/seniors. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Department of Justice.